just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 693. I am Lisa Sheps, and I'm back with my guest host, guest co-host Carl Gonzalez.
Hello, everybody.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. Do not go away, and I'm talking to you.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right.
It is Wednesday, November 3rd, 2022. On the show today, we have Tilt Performance Group and talking about their show, Strange Faces. And then later on, we'll be talking to someone from the Vortex about their show, Entierro. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, London, and Albuquerque. Don't go away. Larger Than Life.
Yes.
That is And Juliet.
I love it. I've been listening to the London version for a while, and then...
Well, now, wait, this... So, this is the New York version.
Yeah.
It just came out. But we're going to hold before we talk about this, because I always start this, but then I talk about other stuff. Because the first thing I want to do is welcome you, Carl Gonzalez, back to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
I've missed you. I had to tie Nicole up and put her in a closet so that I could get you back.
I know. She's waving at me right now. It's kind of scary.
She is. Good thing she can't talk, because I bought all that duct tape.
Yep.
I'm actually watching a TV series called The Patient with Steve Carell that deals with that, and it's really weird.
I've heard good things about it, but I've also...
It's an amazing
piece.
Yeah,
it is okay.
But it's very disturbing. Also, what a great international folk bazaar today from Kim Simpson. You know, he played all this music from Eastern Europe, and this is the kind of the power of music. I'm listening to it on my way in, and I'm relating to it. And I have been to Eastern Europe, but I have not lived there. But my heritage is Eastern European, and it seems like it's in my bones somehow.
I get it.
But I like it. Good for Kim Simpson. Let's introduce the folks. Oh, you know what? I need to introduce Mark, who Hello. Is here. He's programmer to be Mark Nadon.
Nadon.
Ah, la la la. My name also has an accent on the second syllable. Sheps.
All right.
So, Mark, you were on with us a couple weeks ago. You've been gone for a couple weeks, but you're back.
I am. Thank you so much.
Remind people who you are.
My name is Mark Nadon, and I'm going to be working for Co-op, or volunteering, I guess.
Volunteering. We're all volunteers. Yes. Well, awesome. And also here in the studio, back with us, is Ms. Boy. How are you, Ms. Boy?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is so good to see you. I'll just take this moment right now to tell folks that you have a show on this radio station on Mondays at 1 o'clock.
Yes.
The Art Spark Radio Hour. I don't know what the title is. Is that what the title
is?
It's
the Art Spark Radio Hour, because there was too much to fit in the half an hour.
There you go. Yeah. Well, folks should check that out on this radio station and at koop.org. Mondays at 1 o'clock. Can you tell folks, it replaced the common thread that Thor Armbruster used to do. What is Art Spark Radio Hour?
Well, it's basically anything we can think about that comes up this week or in that week about disability, news, fun facts, and we also play pieces from our podcast.
Wonderful. And I am an avid listener to that podcast. We talked about it on this radio show. I listen to it every time it comes out, and you just started season 2. Yes. So, I do know you. I've actually known you for quite a while, but I feel like I know you more because you're in my ears a lot now.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad.
There you go. Let's talk about Anne Juliet. So we've talked about the show itself here before. It actually started previews in New York yesterday, I think. Am I right?
I think. Yeah.
Or do I have it confused with something else?
I think
you looked
right.
at me weird. That's why I thought I was wrong.
Well, I was just checking in my head, but I think you're right. It started previews recently. How about that?
Yeah, I think it was yesterday. So Anne Juliet, of course, tells the story of, what if Juliet didn't kill herself? So, which probably, let's just face it, she probably wouldn't have. She may have thought about it, but...
Yeah.
I have issues with the story of Romeo and Juliet.
Same.
But you, before we went on the air, you said when we were listening to that music, and you said how excited you were, you're going to see it early in 2023.
Yes. My partner Lacey and I are hopefully making it out to New York to see especially Anne Juliet and then A Strange Loop before it closes. So.
Why hopefully? Why not just do it?
I don't know.
You never know.
You never know.
So I do know that Deaf Austin Theater artistic director Brian Cheslick just saw Strange Loop, and he just went on and on about it.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see it. I'm just so excited.
Yeah, I'm sorry it's closing. I mean, we talked about that here not all that long ago. And what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought because somebody texted me, and people always text me during the radio show.
Of course, that's how it always goes.
What's it about, A Strange Loop?
Tell.
I'd like you go for it.
Well, Strange Loop is a meta show. I don't want to spend a lot of time. We've talked a lot about this on the show, so I don't want to take a lot of airtime for it. But it's a story of it's sort of a meta story about a man who wants to get on Broadway, and he does, and it's a large black man, a large queer black man, and the whole show is him and the voices in his head.
I'm all about that meta.
I think that sounds... I was like, I'll let you explain it because I could talk about Strange Loop for like hours and you'll have
which
to cut
fine.
Me off.
So. Which I would, too. I have no problem with you talking. But we did have an opening on Broadway this week, and that was Walking with Ghosts. The one-man show with Gabriel Byrne. The aggregator, did they like it, gave it 5 thumbs down, 4 mixed, and 1 thumbs up. So it wasn't received all that well. And I will read this description. As a young boy growing up on the outskirts of Dublin, stage and screen legend Gabriel Byrne sought refuge in a world of imagination among the fields and hills near his home at the edge of a rapidly encroaching city. Moving between sensual recollection of childhood in an almost now vanished Ireland and commentary on stardom, the actor-writer returns to Broadway to reflect on a life's journey. So it is it's based on his memoir. And it is directed by Lonnie Price and played at one of my favorite theaters, which is the Music Box Theater.
I love the Music Box Theater.
Especially on the outside. It's just gorgeous. It was reviewed for the Times by Alexis Soleski. Didn't like it. There it is. Didn't like it.
All right.
It says...
it's a one-person show, you said, correct?
Yes. So she says the transition from page to stage feels undermotivated and incomplete. And she also goes on to say, what the show lacks, and this is true of the memoir as well, is a sense of why he's examining his life now and in public. So there was a lot of, it seemed like she was saying, like, who cares?
I mean, that's a very fancy way of saying who cares.
It is, isn't it? It just doesn't go right. But she does mention that he had one of those rare things for an artist child. He had a happy childhood with parents that loved each other.
That is rare.
And so maybe you need to have a different experience to have a quote interesting exactly boring. Well, I did as well, and it wasn't. Yeah, it was boring.
I mean, I can't imagine a one person show on Broadway doing well anyway with just how commercial Broadway has gotten, at least in the past couple of years.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that completely. It is harder, certainly. Yeah. But certainly something like a sort of a I forgot the word, but a show about yourself from memoir form. It's like, you got to be pretty interesting to do that. I keep thinking about a one-person show for myself about my life and going, who wants to hear that?
There'd be like 30 minutes where it's like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then the rest of it's like, oh, okay, he watches a lot of TikTok videos. Yeah. So.
Which they're talking about outlawing TikTok. So in other reviews, Ranji from Did They Like It kind of liked it. They said it's an earnest and honest piece of personal confession. Chris Jones of the New York Daily News said this is a deeply honest and courageous work from an actor digging deep into what matters to him, a self-probing of uncommon intensity that never comes off as overly egotistical or glib. So some people liked it.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm. Do y'all like one-person shows, just generally speaking?
I like to be in them.
That wasn't the question.
Yeah, I've seen a lot, and I do. I really like them.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, I liked Eva's show last year, or a couple of years ago. I mean, it wasn't technically one-person show because she had a couple of other characters.
No, you're talking about the Lady Macbeth thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan McQuaid.
Okay.
I'll just
thank you.
Fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun show. What about you, Carl? Do you like one-person shows?
It is hard for me to like one-person shows. Mm-hmm. That being said, I was about to say, I think, you know, Eva and then Judith was...
I didn't get to see Judith. Sorry, Taylor.
It's like, powerhouse actors, powerhouse directors, powerhouse team. I think it takes a lot because I've mainly the shows that I've seen that are one person, I do not like.
Yeah, so. It takes a... Mark, we talked about... You talked about The Catastrophist that was the Laura Gunderson show that was playing at Austin Playhouse at the beginning of the year. Yeah. And you said you wanted to go see that. But you have not seen a one-person show yet, have you?
I have not, but it intrigues me. I think they have to do a little bit more because they don't have as much to work with. So maybe they need to go deep into their own psyche or do something interesting.
Yeah, I find it difficult just on a pragmatic level because you're hearing the same voice. So you're hearing basically the same kind of sonic things in your ears that kind of lulls me to sleep a little bit. So it takes a special piece and a special performer to keep my interest going.
Yeah.
I think the most successful ones are the ones where the performers actually can play lots of different characters. And those ones that I've seen, well, there was a lot of those in the 70s and the 80s in London.
I remember seeing James Whitmore do Bully about Teddy Roosevelt. And it was a great show. It was a full-length, two-act show on Broadway. But he did a great job. But I have to be honest, I got after about an hour and a half, I was ready to go home.
I get it. Yep. Yeah.
So, but there you go. But you'll have your chance to see that in New York in January when you go, if you want to. We talked about this on the show before. They're making a musical out of the movie New York, New York. And to just catch everybody up on this, this is the Kanner & Ebb movie musical that movie with music that had Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli in it, where the song New York, New York came from before Frank Sinatra made it famous. And this Broadway show doesn't have anything. It's a different story. It's a completely different story.
I think that's going to be cool. Plus, it has like a new up-and-coming lyricist, right? What's his name?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
But that's right. That's his name.
It's not a lyricist. Let's just say he's giving additional lyrics. I don't really know what that means.
Oh, I thought, okay, my bad.
No, it's just additional lyrics. So they're using a lot of the songs that are from it. So there's going to be additional music by David Thompson. Oh, no, the book is by David Thompson. And Sharon Washington. And so additional lyrics will be done by Lin-Manuel Miranda. But mostly it's Kander and Ebb. But I keep forgetting which one died. I think Kander died. Or was it Ebb? I don't remember.
Me either.
Anyway, it's going to begin previews at the St. James Theater on March 24th. It's going to open on April 26th. I just find it interesting that they're using the title of something, but not the story.
Yeah, how does that even work?
Well, I think what it is they want to capitalize on that title, New York, New York.
Makes sense.
The name recognition of it. And, of course, they're going to use that song from it. But it's a different story. The story originally, and it's a beautiful movie, and the soundtrack is amazing. I love it. But it's kind of a Star is Born kind of feel with he's a saxophone player, and then she gets to be famous.
Okay.
But it is directed by Susan Stroman, who listeners of this show know that I've worked with several times, name dropper. And that was that. So I'm switching gears to the City Sitter production of Parade that Ben Platt is doing. Anybody know anything about that?
I saw some clips of it last night, and it sounds incredible. He sounds incredible.
And this is what opened last night. This started performances last night. It runs for a week. And Parade, as listeners of this program know, is the show that opened up Ground Floor Theater. We're going to be doing it again in 2025 if we're able to get the rights, because this is rumored to go to Broadway, this particular production. It is a Jason Robert Brown play about the true story of Leo Frank, who was a Jewish man who was falsely accused of killing a young girl in his employ, and then he was taken out of jail by a mob and lynched. So there's some video on this, and it looks amazing. And Ben Platt is really perfect for it.
Yeah.
It's directed by Michael Arden, and it looks really great. There's an article in the Times. It's a Q&A with Ben Platt about what he's wanting to do, why he's doing this. And so Ben Platt is a Jewish performer as well. And he and his brothers famously do music, sing on TikTok and things like that. And oftentimes they're singing Jewish prayers.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. I kind of don't follow him too much, so I don't know.
I'm a Platt fan. He also talks about how cool and uplifting it was after the Broadway show Dear Evan Hansen, and the exact opposite track when the people were not very nice after the opening of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not good.
No.
People don't have to be mean about their comments, but they were. And he said he was very surprised about how mean the internet is. And he said, I shouldn't have been after doing Dear Evan Hansen, which is all about bullying on the internet.
I was about to say, I'm like, that kind of, how do you not know? What kind of life have you lived that you don't know about bullying on the internet?
Well, you just don't think.
After you've done the show about it.
Yeah. True that. Interesting, I did not know this. His boyfriend is Noah Galvin, who succeeded him in Dear Evan Hansen. I did not know they were.
Oh, me either.
Yeah, that was good to know. He's also doing the film version of Merrily We Roll Along by, who's the filmmaker that did About a Boy that was filmed over 10 years? Mark doesn't know.
I don't know.
Faces don't work on the radio, Mark. Anyway, he's doing a production of Merrily We Roll Along that's being filmed in the same way over a period of 20 years. Yes, 20 years. And so they asked about, this article asked Ben Platt.
Richard Linklater.
Thank you, Richard Linklater. And asked him about how he feels about that. And he said it's a little surreal, but what they do is they come in and they shoot at the year that they shoot, and then he like forgets about it till they do it again next year. So it's going to be interesting. I don't want to have to wait 20 years for that, frankly.
Me either. It's like, I love Merrily We Roll Along. I don't know if I love it that much to wait 20 years to watch it.
I join you in that. Yeah. And the final thing, of course, running out of time again, but we might have more time towards the end. But I do want to talk about this, I think it's the Court Theater has now been renamed again yesterday, the Lena Horne Theater. Actually 2 days ago, on November 1st, had their renaming. So this was after, and by the way, she's the first Black woman to have a theater named after her. aptly done, and she'd been in several Broadway shows. But this is after the Black Theater United insisted that the three major Broadway landlords change one of their theaters to honor a Black artist. And the Schubert Organization just unveiled the James Earl Jones Theater. And then Jude Jampson has had for a while the August Wilson Theater. So, mazel tov.
I love it.
Lena Horne was nominated for a Tony for her performance in Jamaica back in the 50s. She also had, but she really came in to her being in 1981 when she did her one-woman show,
One-woman show.
Lena Horne, the lady in her music. And I think it's probably a little different when you add music into the mix because we're used to hearing one person perform music for a while. But she has been in, hold on, let me see if I have this. She did Dance with Your Gods, New Leslie's Blackbirds of 1939, and Tony and Lena Sing. Those are the other things she did on Broadway.
All right.
Yeah. So let's, oh no, we can continue to talk. I just looked at my time.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we've got more time to talk. Sorry, Ms. Boy's going, wait, I'm next. Sorry, I forgot I gave myself a little extra time.
What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yay, I love Winnie
the Pooh. Oh, that's
fun. Who doesn't want to talk about Winnie the Pooh?
Fair, fair.
Now, we've talked about this. The Winnie the Pooh musical, it now has a date that it's doing in Los Angeles for a limited run. This is a show that's created by a man named Jonathan Rockefeller. No relation. But anyway, it's going to be done at the Kirk Douglas Theater, opening on November 23rd. And it is done... And it's going to run through December 30th. It's done with life-size puppetry.
I know. It looks so cool. I want to see it so bad.
Yeah. The score is by Nate Edmondson. Now, I have to admit to this right here, but it's just between the four of us. Please don't tell anybody else.
Of course.
My mother called me Pooh Bear growing up.
Aww. Oh,
Pooh Bear. I was always Pooh.
I love that.
So, boy, it sounds like you like Winnie the Pooh.
I love Winnie the Pooh.
You love E-Mil?
Yes.
A.A. Milne.
Mm-hmm.
I just put together E.E. Cummings and A.A. Milne into a portmanteau of E.E. Milne.
There you go.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Pooh character?
For a long time in my life, it was Eeyore. Because
you were considered an Eeyore?
Because, yeah, I was like, what's the point? It doesn't matter. Anyway, yeah, but I love Picnic, but I love Pooh, actually, I have
Picnic
to say.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Carl?
Tigger.
I was always Tigger.
Tigger.
Like Tigger, everyone's like, oh yeah, you're fun, Tigger, fun, Tigger's fun, ready. Fun. Yep.
Bouncy,
what's your favorite Pooh?
Oh, I don't know, man. I think as a kid, I actually liked Christopher Robin.
Ah,
but,
very good.
Winnie's pretty good, and Tigger, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tigger is great. His bottoms are made of rubber.
There you go. His
tops
rubber is...
Tops are made of rubber, and his bottoms are made of spring.
There we go.
Fun.
I think my favorite, I love Tigger, but I'm thinking Piglet. Piglet was so cute.
Mm-hmm. Piglet was cute.
And I loved that kind of innocence even as a kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Winnie the Pooh is good. Let's also tell you, I didn't talk about this, and we probably should have. There was an opening at the public theater about a new production of A Raisin in the Sun. It opened yesterday. Everything seemed to happen yesterday.
Yeah.
At the public. And this is Robert O'Hara directed it. And as it says by Jesse Green in his review, it's his take on Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun. Wasn't crazy about it at all and blamed pretty much the direction all the way through.
Robert O'Hara, the playwright as well, right? Or am I thinking of two different
people? So I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's a director. I think he's a director. But he said Jesse Green said, quote, by furiously underlining its subtleties and downplaying its conventional strengths. So he's evidently trying to find another take on this classic piece. And so he, instead of going with his strengths, which are there and easy to see, he tried to take a different direction. And he flips the focus, which sort of broadens it and then darkens it all at the same time. Walter Lee is played by Francois Baptiste, and Ruth is played by Mandy Masden. And Francois Baptiste supposedly was pretty good in the role, but again, Jesse Green sort of blaming the direction on not allowing him to go to his full potential.
Yeah.
It also starred Tanya Pinkins in the role of Lena. Tanya Pinkins, of course, is known best, I think, for Caroline or Change. I don't know. I kind of want to see it, but it doesn't sound good.
I know. I'm always intrigued by, big surprise, like when directors take like different unconventional choices and whether they pay off or not.
Yeah. So Jesse Green went on to say that O'Hara directs most of the family scenes as overlapping free-for-alls, creating a generalized impression of dysfunction and very little attachment. And I think attachment is really important in this show.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but you can judge for yourself. You can go to New York and see it at the Public. It's playing right now. Certainly, the cast seems amazing. That's it. All right. So with that, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to a little bit of Lena Horne in Jamaica.
Awesome.
The song Push the Button, which is not to be confused with Push the Button from The Color Purple. Here's Lena Horne.
There's a little island on the Hudson.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Carl Gonzalez.
Hello.
We've been having a great conversation. I've got you trained well.
You really do.
A great conversation with Mark Nadon and Ms. Boy. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to Ms. Boy about the show that Tilt Performance Group is doing right at this very moment at... oh my God.
Violet Crown.
I keep forgetting Violet Crown. Violet Crown City Church.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the show Strange Faces. Tell us about it.
Well, Strange Faces was written by the Broadway writer.
Music director. And writer.
Mm-hmm. Andrea Grody. She originally wrote it when she was in grad school. And she wrote it because she grew up with a brother who has autism, and she wanted to express what it's like for families who have a family member with autism.
Okay, so this show focuses on characters that have autism?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. this is the first time it's been played by actors with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
At least half the cast have autism.
Right.
And it... is a fascinating show that is told in three separate stories that are not interlinked except by autism.
Oh, very interesting. Tell us about each. Can you give us a little piece of each story?
Yeah, I can give you a little bit. So my story, my name's Dell. Like, my character's name is Dell, and I am with the wonderful Michelle Alexander.
We love Michelle Alexander.
She's pretty cool.
Yes, she is. She's my spouse,
mm-hmm.
and we have a baby boy. So our story starts when we first get the baby, and the development of our story is realizing that he's not speaking. And so Claude plays that part, which is a non-verbal person with autism.
Yep.
But so all of their dialogue, which is all sung, is their internal voice. They never interact with us. And it's about that person's journey, but it's also about our journey as parents, like
sure.
the losses or the joys of having a kid that isn't quite how you expected them to be. And then, and for Claude says they're really excited to play a part, to play a person with autism because they have autism, and also because to represent non-speaking characters, people who, just because you can't speak doesn't mean you don't have anything to say.
Sure.
So, and then the second story is a pair of twins, a brother and sister, and they are ready. They just graduated high school. We meet them, and one of them has autism. And it's about how they grow once they get to college. And the brother has always been a caretaker for the sister. And how does that change when you move into that next developmental stage?
Sure.
And then the third couple are another brother and sister, but we start their story when the brother is born, and the older sister is not that delighted about having a brother, period. And then they their story is about how they get through, basics about that, what it's like to have a sibling with a disability of any kind, and how that impacts you as a kid. You don't get to have a normal life with equal focus.
Right.
Necessarily.
Sure. That's amazing. I think about the first piece, the one that you're doing. Mm-hmm. We did a show at Ground Floor Theater because, you know, all roads lead there.
Yes.
But we did Max Langert's Gibberish Mostly, which was exactly that. It was about a family struggling with a nonverbal child suffering from autism. Mm-hmm. Same kind of deal. It was portrayed. We were able to hear that child, but only not directly with the parents.
Right. Well, can I just, not to correct you, but apparently I'm going to. You don't suffer with autism. You thrive with autism.
You thrive. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much
thank
for that.
You.
I will accept that criticism completely. So thank you. Yeah. So that's amazing. So has Andrea been part of this?
Yeah. Andrea, we came down last weekend and saw all three shows, mm-hmm. which, of course, was quite daunting. here's the person who actually wrote the words I'm
sure.
supposed to say, right? And she was really sweet. And was really encouraging to us. And she was thrilled that this piece that they had, you know, it was a college production when they first did it. So she didn't really, it wasn't really a full piece. And now she really feels that what we did can help her create it into a full musical. Another interesting thing about this production is that it is completely sung. Well, not completely, probably 80% sung.
So, amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
And each family has a different style of singing.
And is it treated as, is it three stories, one after another, or are they interweaved?
They're interwoven.
Interwoven. Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you for
yeah.
helping me use my words.
And it's also interesting because the brother and sister, their story is just in that first year of college, whereas the other two stories are across a lifetime. So that makes makes the audience have to pay attention a bit and makes us work hard.
So what is the style of the music? If you were to be put on the spot to ask that question.
Well, I think Andrew would agree it's not a musical that like it. It's not Lloyd Webber.
Thank God for
right.
that.
I mean, it's not a sing-along kind
sure.
of musical.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
one could argue neither is Lloyd Webber.
Yeah,
but
really.
that's
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a fan.
But I guess
this isn't about attacking Lloyd Webber.
I grew up with a lot of Lloyd Webber. I know Lloyd Webber songs. I didn't even know a Lloyd Webber because we all had to sing him in school. It's the brother and sister. Their stuff is a lot more like an operetta.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And then our stuff, it's modern. Put it that way. That's
cool.
What I would call it. Yeah.
And this is directed by the incomparable Adam Roberts.
Yes.
I'm assuming he's also music directing.
He's music
director. That's what he does.
And this is our first live show with an orchestra. With a live orchestra.
That was going to be my next question.
Yes.
So you're singing to a live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
What's the instrumentation? How many pieces?
There's a flute, a piano, a violin, and I don't remember what the other one is. Sorry.
Well, that's amazing. And how has that experience been for you and the rest of the cast?
It was a big transition for us, as you can imagine,
sure.
to go from Adam just plonking out the piano part, not that he ever just plonks, to be honest, but to the other layers of the score being in there. And that transition was a bit of a struggle for us. But once we got there, it was wonderful to sit on them. You know, like not sit on the organ. They didn't really sit on them.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Musically, like that, they held us.
Sure.
Yeah.
And this is, as we talked about, it's done at the Violet Crown Church, mm-hmm. which is, you know, where Tilt has been sort of taking up residence lately. So
yes.
That's it's a wonderful little place. Mm-hmm. And it's in the big room there with the basketball
the
court.
Yeah, in the gym.
Yeah.
And props and thank you to Violet Crown Church. They've just
sure.
been so supportive of mm-hmm. us and let us leave our stuff there all the time, and which is really cool. We don't have to break down.
That's awesome.
Oh, isn't that great?
I'm glad they work with you on that.
Yeah. And I do want to give a call out to Blake Common, who is a regular Tilt member. And his part, the character he plays the comic relief in the play.
He always does, doesn't he?
Yeah. And
he's
it's
so funny.
It is as if Andrea had sat down and had a conversation with him. I mean, it is absolutely perfect. And he, she said that his dialogue actually came from a conversation with one of the people she interviewed to write it, because she interviewed the community. So she interviewed parents. She talked to young people with autism and included their thoughts and their language in the play, which is great.
Sure. So much of the work that Tilt does is devised, meaning mm-hmm. you guys put it together from
yeah.
start to finish. This is clearly not a devised piece.
No.
As a performer, how has the experience been for you, the contrast between creating a piece from scratch and doing another person's work?
Well, we did that with Pandora, and... But that
was Alan Robertson.
That was
so
Alan
that
Robertson.
Count.
And also, he met with us and wrote for
right,
us.
Right, he made it for you.
Yeah.
So that was...
This is really different.
Yeah, this is.
I have to say, for me, this has been the most challenging play I've ever worked on. I am not a singer, I'm not a trained singer. And so I also learned that I can count. I'm a musician, I can count, but I can't count and remember lines and remember my blocking at the same time. My learning curve is really steep on that. It's different because we don't get to play around as much.
Right.
We're really, really been focused from the beginning on honoring Andrea's script.
Sure.
And luckily, people like Blake, who can like learn everything verbatim, they for them, it's no problem. And also, the different thing about this production is we have actors in the play who are not members of Tilt, from the general broader theater world
sure.
here in Austin,
mm-hmm.
all of whom are awesome singers and who have provided, like, it's been interesting to integrate the two companies,
sure.
two groups of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, we're almost out of time. Tell folks, you're open now.
We're open now. We did a first weekend. We had full houses every night.
Great.
And then we do Friday night, Saturday matinee, Sunday matinee. Because
sure.
we wanted to make it accessible to as many people as possible, and afternoons can be more accessible.
Great. And it goes through November 6th. Where can folks go to get more information?
To tiltperformance.org.
Wonderful. And before we let you go, I mm-hmm. know I would just want to have you put your Art Spark hat on again.
Yes.
You guys have an event coming up pretty soon, don't
we
you?
We do, this week. So we are hosting a dance event that is this weekend, and Meet Share Dance Festival, and it's all over Texas. It's in various sites over Texas, and this is the first time it's been in Austin. And it is a 3-day festival, and it's November 11th through November 13th in Austin. Dancers of all abilities and skills are welcome. The festival features 4 different workshops, a street parade, and an opportunity to meet dancers in the field of inclusive dance. So if you want to be involved in dance and you believe everybody has the right and should be encouraged to dance, go to artsparktexas.org for more information.
Wonderful. Well, Ms. Boy, thank you so much
for joining us
on the show. And I love that you're part of the co-op family now.
Yes.
All right, that was Ms. Boy of Tilt Performance Group's production of Strange Faces, playing now through the 6th of November. For more information, tiltperformance.org. And now we're going to listen to just a little piece of music from the show, not this performance, but this is called Wheels from Strange Faces.
Every train lover's dream is Horseshoe Curve. It's this place where three major train tracks meet, and you can watch several trains pass through. There's not really anything else there, but we knew Jamie would love it. Nobody watches trains like he does.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Carl.
Hello.
And Mark.
Hello.
And now Eva. Hello, Eva.
Hello.
This is Eva Margarita, and we're going to be talking to Eva about the show they're doing at the Vortex. But before we do that, let's talk about a little stuff going on locally. And, you know, we've talked on the show a lot that we don't really talk enough about the stuff that are going on at the all of our universities here doing theater. And when we think of them, we usually think of UT, Texas State, Southwest Texas, St. Edwards, but we don't typically think of Concordia University, and they have a theater department as well.
Awesome. I knew they had one. I just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know that... Anyway, they're doing a production of American Son. That opens November 10th and plays through the 13th. This is the problem with these academic theaters. There's such a short window to see them. But American Son is a very famous book and play, and they're doing it at their Black Box Theater. It doesn't have an address, but you can get information by going to concordia.edu, or better, you can find it on Now Playing Austin or atxtheater.org, and see it. It's directed by Dr. Kelly Carolyn Gordon, and I'm just really thrilled that they're doing it. I've never seen a production of it.
Me either.
Anybody? No?
No. No.
Okay. Well, I would encourage folks to check that out and all the other shows that are happening at our theater. We have a very dynamic institutional theater community in our colleges here. I'm having trouble speaking today.
I get it, though. I understand.
Yeah. Still playing in town. Yamil Kukui's in its last... weekend. You saw Yamil Kukui.
Yes, I did.
It's fun. I finally got to sit and watch it last week as well.
I mean, I thought it was incredible. So
Eva, did you see it?
No,
you know where you don't even know what we're talking about?
I do the play.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it though.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you have a chance this weekend, but I don't think you will because you're doing your own stuff.
I am performing.
Yeah. Chicago is happening right now, Broadway Across America through the 6th. And then Lakeway Players is doing Nonsense.
Oh, good for them.
We're sort of, there's a lot of stuff happening in the schools, and there's a lot of stuff happening starting like next week, but it seems that Austin is kind of in a little bitty lull of productions playing. Hopefully that will be good for things like Yamil Kukui.
Yeah.
Folks are going to want to see that. It's like, it was so fun to watch this puppetry. And now, people that know me know that I'm not the hugest fan of puppets. Of puppet theater, but I appreciate it and respect the heck out of it. This show was amazing. Everything was a puppet. The set was a puppet.
Yeah, literally, it was so good.
Yeah,
Caroline Reck knows what she's doing with puppets.
Caroline Reck does. And I do have to say, in the lobby beforehand, there is an artist named. Oh my God, I just lost her name. Anyway, Caroline's daughter has a little showing of some of her sculpture.
Clementine,
thank you. I knew it started with a C. That is that. And now we can go to Today in Theater History. But before, while I'm bringing this up, I do want to remind folks, I talked about it a little bit right now, is that we have a great organization called atxtheater.org. It's got a website that's got a great aggregate of all the things happening in Austin, all the theater companies, and it's become a really good way for theater companies in Austin to talk to each other and have better communications between theater companies and really understand that we are not in competition with one another, that everybody's success is everybody else's success.
Exactly.
Yeah. So atxtheater.org for everything theater in Austin. You can also become a member of that organization, and I'll just leave it at that. Today in Theater History. today, in 2022, hold on, I'm trying to get the right page because I can't.
You want the breaking news sound?
Yes, thank you. A Beautiful Noise. The Neil Diamond musical starts previews tonight. So there you go. Grey Gardens opened in 2006.
Loved it.
Junk opened in 2017. Love that one. Didn't see it.
I did not see it.
Meet Me in St. Louis opened in 89. Could that have been a revival? That doesn't make sense.
I was about to say, I'm like, I don't want to, you know,
yeah, that doesn't
not
make
trust
sense.
The internet, but
it does not say it's a revival, but it just says it's opened. The Allergist Wife opened in 2000, and Fair Game opened in 1957, and finally, I'd Rather Be Right opened in 1937.
The Carl Gonzalez musical.
I have a feeling that show might have some racist under or overtones, so I'm kind of afraid of that.
I mean, I'm almost guaranteeing that is. There's no maybe about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So anyway,
the Carl Gonzalez story.
To the birthday of David Schwimmer, Philip Boykin, and Lynn Nottage. Speaking of Clyde.
Lynn Nottage.
So we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to, this just came out, the music from A Beautiful Noise, the, what's his name?
Neil Diamond?
Neil Diamond musical, thank you. And actually, so, you know, I come from the era of Neil Diamond, Song Sung Blue, which I always thought until today was Song Sung Blue, but here is Song Sung Blue. Nope, that wasn't it. Was not queued up into the right thing. So let's try this again. Song Sung Blue.
Song Sung Blue.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM in Austin, Texas, streaming in the World Wide Web at koop.org. We had lovely conversations about local stuff happening. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to Eva Margarita about her show that's playing at the Vortex called Entierro. And it's playing just 2 days. And I say show, but it seems to be much more than that.
Yeah, it is a performance piece, I would definitely say. So it is a grief work, a grief performance, that asks the audience to directly engage with the burial site. So the way that we'll work is that we'll start inside with about a 15-minute meditation, and then we'll process outside into the burial space, where at that point I will ask the audience to take the soil into their hands and to please bury me.
Bury you?
Yes.
I was going to ask who we're burying. I guess it's you.
It is me, yeah.
Oh, that's my.
That's wild.
Okay, so this is a piece that you have put together?
Yes.
Tell us about that process, what started it, why, etc.
Sure. This is actually part two of a piece. So the piece we did last year at the Vortex around this time was called Obituary. And at that point, I asked the audience to write down what they were grieving. And then I buried those things with me by my own hand. And in this part, kind of thinking about like the as above, so below. And if it is not, if it's in my hand, it's also in your hand, too. And so we're asking the audience this time to put the dirt and the soil in their hands and to do the burial work.
Okay. So clearly we know this is happening at a particular time of year during Dia de los Muertos. Is this part of that celebration, or is this completely separate?
I would definitely consider it a part of the celebration. So where my family is from in Central America, we celebrate Dia de Santos, which is like All Saints Day. And I know Dia de Muertos is like a 2-day celebration between November 1st and 2nd. This certainly follows that up, being on the 4th and the 5th. But also thinking about, fall has just opened up. Depending on your particular spiritual practice, this might be the new year for you. So also thinking about what it might be to kind of be in a time of transformation.
Amazing. I'm going to be stuck on logistics for just a little second. I'm very familiar with the Vortex, and of course we have the lovely theater, and then you're going to go outside for the burial. I have to ask, are y'all digging down into the ground, or is it, or did you build something above ground?
No.
You're actually digging into the earth of the Vortex.
Yes.
And you did the same thing last year?
So last year we kind of set up a mound inside the theater.
Okay.
And this time the mound is set up outside.
So there's a mound.
So there's the Eloise stage outside.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So maybe about a few inches in front of that, we'll dig 1 foot into the ground. There'll be a mound in front of kind of like that burial site. I'll crawl through the mound and kind of create these two piles for the audience to pull from.
That's very exciting. The experience on its, not even on its surface, I would think it is very ritualistic and probably profound for you as a performer to do this, but the audience will get the same kind of, they're going to participate with you.
Yeah. My goal is for this to really be audience-centered, and for the audience to realize how vulnerable we are to one another. That certainly for me, I'm the one being buried, but I know that there's also going to be people who may not expect a burial, who are just going to be at the Vortex, you know, at Patrizzi's for dinner. And here we are.
True.
Welcome to my funeral. But I think that there's something really metaphorical about that, about how grief kind of comes upon you suddenly, and next thing you know, it's just kind of taken over the moment.
And I think it's great that you're doing it publicly, where people aren't necessarily expecting it, and I just love that we're kind of forcing them to look at the arts. Mm-hmm. And they're also forcing them to sort of consider their own internal spirituality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. And is this something that you look to do every year?
I think for certainly around this time, I like to put out a work. I like to think that my work has seasons. And this kind of being a transformative period, definitely around this time. But I mean, I do work usually around the summer as well, whenever I have just kind of like a big period of time.
Okay. So forgive me for asking this on the air, because I, you know, I do my own engineering and we didn't get to chat beforehand. You and I have never met.
No. Yeah.
So my question is, are you a Austinite? Are you a local Austin person?
I'm actually originally from Los Angeles.
Okay. But you live here now.
But I live here now.
Well, I'm surprised we haven't met.
Well, hello, hi, hey.
Hi. Yeah, this is usually the kind of stuff I do off the air, but and I didn't want to insult you by not knowing you. I'm so pleased to know you, and I love your energy.
Oh,
and
thank
it really
you.
Makes me want to come and see this piece, although I'm probably not going to be able to. But I am excited about the idea of something like this happening each year for you, and I think the Vortex is absolutely the spot on venue for what you're doing. Do you have a long relationship with the Vortex?
I am actually a board member at the Vortex.
Okay.
Full disclosure, yeah. I have been putting work up with them, but actually since 2020 during the pandemic. The first piece I put up was during the Future X Festival.
Oh, yeah.
I put
with
up
Rudy.
With Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
I submitted a few pieces with them and started a working relationship before I even moved to Austin, and then came here and got really involved with the Vortex. And when Bonnie, our founder, asked me to come on board, I immediately said yes.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, I'm here to support the artist, but also as an artist who's put up work with the Vortex, I definitely know what the process is like.
That's great. The vibe of the Vortex is so wonderful and so vibrant and so active these days. So again, tell folks when the show is, or the performance is actually happening.
Yeah, so it's happening this Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Vortex.
Okay, and where can folks go to get more information about it?
I would check out the vortexrep.org.
Awesome. Eva Margarita, thank you so much for coming on Offstage and on the Air. I hope this isn't the last time.
Yay, thank you so much, Lisa.
Wonderful. Well, that was Eva Margarita. The Vortex is performing in Tierra on November 4th and 5th. That's this Friday and Saturday. For more information, vortexrep.org. And this is a beautiful piece that I didn't know, from a show called In the Green Room, and it's called Ritual, which seems very apropos for this piece. We'll be right back.
Bobby.
Nope. Again, I miscued it. I don't know how I've done that every single... Oh, you know what? It didn't make it on. So we'll just consider that our break. I did not get it onto the tape, so it's not even there. It is beautiful. It's from a show called In the Green that was done at Lincoln Center. It's called Ritual, and maybe for you on the pod... Actually, yeah, you on the podcast, you're going to get to hear a little bit of it. So, Mark, it's you and I. We didn't tell everybody, but Carl Gonzalez had to scoot away. We're going to say goodbye to folks. What words of wisdom do you want to leave folks with?
Well, I think that Eva's show sounds really cool, and I think they should. I think I'll go.
Okay, there you go.
I'm very curious about the audience participation part of it.
That's a good thing. Well, we are all done for the day. Coming up next is Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner. John, what do you want to tease? What do you got going today?
It is our last election forum. We've got District 1.
I'm going to miss them.
Yeah, me too. Amy's done a fantastic job. And I hope everybody is going to get out and vote. You've got two more days of early voting. And
yes,
we're
please,
way
folks,
behind.
Thank you for mentioning that. I did a big talk about this last week. Please go vote.
Yes. We're only at 20%.
Yeah, do it early. I did it. I voted. I yo voted. And I got the new Blue Bonnet sticker.
Yeah,
that's great.
I voted early, yeah. Go.
Please vote. Vote early, vote often. Don't vote often, you can't. That's great, John. I'm looking forward to it. Let's go off with the newly released Spanish version of Company that Antonio Banderas has done, and this is the title song. We will see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Bobby cielo.
Bobby, Bobby.
Robbie. Robert Papo,
Bobby, te he llamado
Bobby,
mil veces.
Bobby, cielo.
Bobby, Bobby,
Ángel, necesito que hable.